And the chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and reconsideration of Senate Bill 56B be taken up immediately. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Chair requests unanimous consent that the motion on Senate Bill 56B do pass as amended to the floor and rescind the subsequent referral to Ways and Means be reconsidered. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. I'm going to go into work session, and the chair will entertain a motion on Senate Bill 56B with a due pass as amended to the floor and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
So moved.
Representative Tomei moves Senate Bill 56B with a due pass as amended to the floor and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. Clerk, call the roll.
Aye.
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 Excuse?
Here. I mean, yes. Whatever.
Excuse. Aye. Senate Bill 56, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. I'll close the work session on 56B and open a work session on House Bill 2462. Sandy.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2462, we heard in March. This is the bill that requires Oregon Health Plan participants to be an Oregon resident. It establishes the types of information to be used in establishing the residency requirements. What you have attached to your SMS is a hand engrossed with a dash two amendments, which details out the criteria and information that can be used in establishing the residency requirement. You also have, at our hearing in March, there were some questions in regards to current requirements and what other states are doing. That is attached. That was provided by the Office of Medical Assistance Programs. And Jim Edge is here to speak.
Yeah.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning.
Members of the committee. For the record, I'm Jim Edge, the Acting Assistant Administrator of the Office of Medical Assistance Programs. Just have a couple of comments on the dash two amendments to this bill. We haven't had the official analysis done on this yet, but just wanted to say, for the record, we agree with the concept of making sure that the Oregon Health Plan is for Oregon residents and not for non-residents. We agree that there's probably some room to tighten up the eligibility requirements on the current rules. We have just a couple of concerns about what's in the dash two amendments, and one of them is in line 16 and 17. It speaks about three sworn statements on forms provided by DHS. We're a little bit concerned that CMS might see that as an impediment to health care.
We're not being?
Centers for Medicaid and Medicaid Services, the federal government. And we're not quite sure even what sworn statement means, but especially if it means a notarized statement, that would probably be seen by the feds as an impediment to care. So we just wanted to express that concern. And also just mention the fact that we have not done a fiscal impact statement on this bill yet, but there is now at least a small fiscal impact on it because of the fact that there's a requirement that a new form be developed, that it be distributed throughout the state, that it be reviewed and analyzed by caseworkers, and that would cause some pending of some applications and a little bit of extra workload, on eligibility staff. And we don't know yet what that is, but just wanted to let you know that does exist. And that's all the comments I have.
I appreciate the comments. The three sworn statements, clearly if we were looking for something to be notarized, we would have said that, and it's not the intent, and it's not the way it was written. Holly Robinson's the one that drafted this, and we looked very carefully at the federal requirements and what other states have done as far as eligibility determination. We are comfortable that this is within the scope of what CMS would allow. Do you want to talk to it? You're just here to watch? Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative.
Thank you. In judiciary this year, we passed out a law that had to do with the notarization of things and changed it so that people could just make their own affidavit. And it just would say on the form that they understand that their signing says that the above is true. I mean, it's just notarizing without the notary, essentially. So, I mean, if you just had some disclaimer like that, would probably get you through. So that, and like, I believe the chair is right, when it doesn't say notarized, I don't think we're asking you to require notarization.
Okay, Mr. Chair and Representative Barker, if that's the intent, that there may be less of a concern then. Surrounding states, when we did a little bit of a review of what surrounding states are doing, do require more than Oregon does. Oregon's current rules require, I think that the terminology that's used is a note from the client stating the, his or her intent to reside in the state. And surrounding states use language tighter than that. They use language about a signed statement from the client indicating his residence or intent to stay permanently in the state. No one goes quite as far as requiring three other Oregon residents to sign statements, and I don't know how CMS would respond to that, but we can find out.
The three was an arbitrary number that just popped out of my head, which is a dangerous place for things to be. I guess, I mean, the whole reason behind putting the signed letter thing in there was to try to be sensitive to those who may not be able to go get a card or that don't drive, so they aren't going to get a driver's license or would have difficulty going to wherever to get a ID card. And so this would allow another option, another pathway to determine. But at the same time, what we're after here is if somebody wants to be in our Medicaid program, they need to do something affirmative to be there. And so it requires some action on their part. I certainly would be willing to modify the number. That's not a big deal. I don't think I'm comfortable with one, but I'd be comfortable with two. So,
Mr. Chairman, we can certainly check that out and talk with CMS about it, and maybe if it could be reworded to say a signed statement by the client himself, which I don't think it currently says, and then by one or two others, if it read something like that, it probably would be more acceptable to CMS if we reworded it just a little bit like that.
Okay. Well, I got a little trouble with just a form that the client signs. I'm looking for some verification here, and for somebody else that's an Oregon resident to say this. Yes, indeed, this person is here with an intent to stay or whatever. I think that. That's a comfort level rather than them just themselves staying because at that point that it's still a matter of them just walking into an office and signing a piece of paper and it's not what I would consider to be an affirmative action. So at least with this they would have to know somebody and get somebody willing to come to the table for them in lieu of an official piece of identification. So Representative Tomac.
You know, I work some with homeless people, and I can imagine that there would be folks who do not know anybody who could state that they are a resident here. If they're only associated with other homeless people who don't have a fixed residence, I think that could be a real problem.
Well, but a homeless person can have a fixed residence. They can have a general post box or
don't.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, just looking at the staff measure summary, it says that CMS states that states may not deny Medicaid eligibility to an otherwise qualified resident of the state because the individual's residence is not maintained permanently or at a fixed address. So I think that that probably addresses Representative Tomei's concern.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that's the position we hold to represent our people. I'd certainly welcome the homeless or anybody that came into my office or called me and said, would you sign for me? I'd be happy to look it up, see where they are, check them out, make sure it's valid. That's what we're trying to do, is make sure that their eligibility is really valid.
But it states here they need 3 sworn statements signed by a current resident. If the only people they're associating with would be other homeless people who don't have a residency, they would not have anyone to sign that statement for them.
I'm not sure that being homeless means that you're not a resident of the state of Oregon.
Oh, I agree. But what I'm saying is they don't have a house address. They don't have a post office box.
Jim, how do you deal with that currently?
Mr. Chairman, in many cases, homeless people are affiliated at least with a shelter and can get mail through a shelter or make a contact with a shelter to get at least get their OHP application filled out and their ID card returned to a shelter. So usually they have some kind of a contact. Those shelters may have a little bit of concern about providing 3 sworn statements about that person's intent to continuously reside in Oregon. Again, I'm just a little bit concerned that that CMS may consider that a little bit too much, and if we backed off to 2 statements maybe, and if we didn't call them sworn statements, that's a little bit of a eyebrow-raising statement to say that someone has to make a sworn statement that a homeless person is permanently intending to reside. But if someone was just certifying that this person has been coming to their homeless shelter and appears to intend to reside and would sign that, I think we could require that sort of thing. A couple of statements by a couple of other people that it appears that this person is an Oregon resident and probably will continue to reside here.
May I?
Yes.
So somebody who's living under a bridge who's not associated with any kind of shelter, how would they establish residency?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Tomei, there has to be some kind of an ability to get mail or the homeless person wouldn't be able to sign up for the Oregon Health Plan. There is a requirement that they fill out an application, that they mail it in, and that they have some way to receive word back that their application has been reviewed and they're determined eligible and they're given an ID card. So I assume that some homeless people, if they don't even have the ability to get mail in some way, probably are not on the Oregon Health Plan for that reason. But there is a need for them to have some kind of ability to get mail in order to be eligible.
Thanks, Jim. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a question for Mr. Edge. Do you have the staff measure summary in front of you?
No.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dalton, no, I don't.
Well, I'll just read you this line. This is the background here, and it talks about CMS and their requirements. It says states may not deny Medicaid eligibility because of a durational residence requirement. I just want to be clear that that means that you can't have a waiting period, essentially, for somebody to be eligible for our state Medicaid program.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dalto, yes, there is a basic thought process on the part of the federal government that eligibility should be seamless if someone moves from one state to another. The concept that this is a partially federally funded program, that it exists in all states, if someone moves from one state to another and continues to be low income, or continues to be categorically eligible, there should be a seamless process and there shouldn't be a period of time where they have to go without health care. And that is a basic concept of CMS.
Which is why we stay clear away from that in this. Now, however, if somebody's on the Oregon Health Plan and they drop off for failure to pay premiums, they have a 6-month period before they can reestablish. So which we did last session. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Regarding the fiscal impact, Mr. Edge, would it create a major impact if, as of a time certain, after that period, any eligibility that was rechecked were to be renewed at that point and not go back and create major cost?
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, I agree that having to go in and do this kind of a check on people who are currently in their certification period would be an even higher fiscal impact. If we just did it at time of new certification or recertification, the fiscal impact would be lower. There still would be some, though, in the creation of this form, the distribution system for the form, and the review and analysis of whether the forms are true and valid and accurate by eligibility workers.
And that wouldn't be included in the normal cost that you'd have for certification in the future?
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, it would be in addition to what's currently being done. It would be three new forms that would need to be submitted along with the other forms that may be required. It wouldn't be an entire new process, but it would be a little bit more time it would take to review applications.
And at the same time, we're not talking about all new applications because a large number are going to have driver's licenses or ID cards or inmate identification cards. So, you know, this is kind of a fail-safe in the system more than anything. So, any other questions? I think I would like to explore, and I'm willing to go to two and explore if there is another word other than sworn that can get at what we're after here.
Certified?
Huh?
Certified or something?
Well, that's a question for Holly, and we'll figure out if there's another way to get at intent here. So, other than that, damn good bill, don't you think?
I agree.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. Okay, colleagues, I will talk to Holly about trying to come up with another word, and that was, and this was Holly's attempt to put my English into legal form, and sometimes the translation is rough. So we will be bringing this back. So with that, I'm going to close the work session on 2462. And colleagues, we will be meeting Friday. We will have maybe this back, maybe a Senate bill back. Or
we do have a reconsideration.
We've got reconsideration of Senate Bill
47D.
Right. And because there's some concern after we passed the bill that the governor's office seemed to have some issues. Martin Taylor is trying to see if he can resolve those. If they can't be resolved, we will remove those amendments from the bill and send the bill on as it was. We also Friday have a presentation. Representative Rosenbaum and part of a task force in the interim, and they're going to come and present to us. I think about a half-hour presentation, I think. So we'll have one, maybe two bills and a presentation Friday.
Great.
So with that, we are adjourned.
Good.